the people of sake actually brought me into sake.
Back in 1988, this place was actually in Ginza on the main drag.
At first, it was kind of soy sauce. It was miso.
To the point where it actually changed my life.
New Year's Day, 1989.
Not just sake as a beverage, but all the culture and history.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sake on Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to expanding the dialogue surrounding Japan's iconic beverages, sake and shochu, usually recorded at the Japan Sake and Shochu Information Center in the heart of Tokyo. The show is made possible with the support of the Japan Sake and Shochu Makers Association. My name is Sébastien Lemoine. I'm one of your regular hosts, and today I will be having a conversation across three continents and time zones to cover a very important topic that we have not dealt with before on the show. It comes back so often as a question from sake consumers, or I would say as a headache for sake professionals such as sommelier and restaurant owners, but not only. How can I preserve the taste and fragrance of that great sake bottle I just opened? I think we have all had that experience of poorly preserved, oxidized wine or sake in our lifetime. A few months ago, I was preparing the interview of Sarah Stewart, sake and wine educator, for episode 115, Should Sake Be Promoted Like Wine? Sarah kindly indicated that the British Sake Association had started a research project with none other than Coravin or Coravin, the US company behind the famous wine preservation system. Leading the project from the UK side was a recently developed premium sake brand available in the UK, Toku Sake. So we reached out to the BSA and Coravin, and it is my great pleasure to be able to exchange with my two guests for today, Chris Hunt, who's the CEO of Toku Sake, a premium sake brand, and Greg Lambrecht, the man whose passion for wine is behind the invention of Coravin's devices and the creation of the company whose board he now chairs. Thank you very much, both, for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So to start with, I would love to hear a little bit about yourself, and I will give priorities to ladies. Grace.
Thank you. So I'm Grace. I'm the COO of Toku Sake. As you said, Sebastian, we are a relatively new super premium sake. We hail from Asahikawa, which is known as the coldest city in Japan, in Hokkaido, northern prefecture. And we launched at the end of 2022. So we are about 18 months into our journey as a sake brand in the UK. But it's going tremendously well. My background is that I spent about 12 years working in the spirit side of the drinks industry, and as such, have applied a lot of the learnings that I had from working with some of the world's largest brands and then tiny little independents from the UK as well into the Toku strategy. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind. We've achieved a lot in the last 18 months, and a lot of that is down to our work with Coravin.
Well, congratulations for that. And I'm going to have to ask you, because this sake, I mean, this podcast is very much about sake. How did you cross the path of sake, or how did sake find you?
Sake found me. I have always had a huge interest in the category, but never really knew that much about it. And I had taken some time out of my career to have my daughter. And Anthony Newman, who's our co-founder, had found me on LinkedIn and sent me a message saying that we're pulling together this management team for a new super premium sake. And it just sparked this kind of interest within me. I had always drunk sake, but in the sort of typical context that most people are introduced to the category. So normally hot, cheap junmai in a kind of hole-in-the-wall Japanese restaurant here in the UK. And although I had had really overwhelmingly quite positive experiences with it, and I was really interested, I think this prevalence of lack of education in the UK, I was definitely a victim of. So I ended up joining Toku at the beginning of 2022 before we launched that November. And I did a certified sake sommelier qualification and just tried to immerse myself as much as I could. And that's really where it started.
Did you actually visit Asahikawa?
Sadly not. I'm still yet to go to Japan, but it is on my list, hopefully at some point in the next year.
Well, I'm sure it's going to come soon. Thank you very much.
Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm.
Craig, I mean, I'm honestly very curious about your own history and path.
Yeah, it's a twisted path to where I have landed, but it's been a fun one. As you know, the sake and the wine industries are tremendously wonderful ways to spend your life. But I didn't start that way. I started in nuclear physics. I'm a native of the United States, born in New York, raised in California, went to school at MIT twice, and I was passionate about trying to solve the world's energy problems. And so I started off my career doing fusion power, the kind that still doesn't work and is still 50 years away. But I was enthusiastic as a young man, studied fusion for 4 years, and my professor came to me and said, you know, this is never going to work out. We're just drawing down grant money. This is never going to be a profitable form of energy production. And I was like, I was devastated. But I told him I couldn't believe him. I needed to go figure it out for myself. Who was working on the hardest part of the next reactor? And he said, well, it's Mitsubishi Juco, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries in Kobe. And they're working on the diverter system. But unfortunately, Greg, they don't speak English in that group. And so I studied Japanese very intensely for 7-8 months, went over to applied for a job, got the job, and worked in Japan for 18 months to realize that he was right. Fusion was not going to work, but that I loved Japan. I loved the lifestyle as a young man. I loved sake, which I was introduced to by my coworkers. But again, I was 20, 21 years old. So you learn what a 20-year-old learns about sake, that it's spectacular, that the best stuff is expensive, and that the best stuff is really expensive. So I came back to the United States. I studied biomedical engineering medicine and started inventing new medical therapies. I've been doing that since I was 23 years old after grad school. I came up with Korovin as a result of my work and my love for wine. I fell in love with wine when it was illegal. I was 16 in the United States. I looked older and I went up to Napa Valley with some friends and tasted some wine. And I was like, this is the best stuff I've ever tasted. How did you make this? And I've never looked back. It's always been a part of my life and my life at home. Glass with friends, glass with my spouse. When we chose to drink the same wine, but there were some frustrating things about it. I was traveling back and forth to Japan for Pfizer at that time, and I would open a bottle, I would have a glass, my spouse would have a glass maybe, and then I would leave for 2 weeks and come back and the wine would be oxidized. And so that was frustrating. And then fundamentally what I love about wine and what I love about sake is the variety. There's an almost infinite variety to explore, and you're stuck exploring it in the volume that they sell it to you, because when you open it, it starts to oxidize. And so you are going to consume that bottle until it's gone and then go to the next one. And I wanted to be able to explore in parallel. I wanted to be able to drink 3 different sake side by side, 4 different wines side by side. And really do what we do at trade shows, where we taste different wines. And so I came up with Korovin when my wife was pregnant at the time. She stopped drinking completely, and I was in a crisis. And luckily, I've worked in medicine, so I was very good at the technology that ultimately came about and formed the first Korovin prototype.
How long did it take you from say, okay, I'm gonna do this, to something that worked?
There was an old Orson Welles television commercial when I was a kid, you know, about how great things take a long time. It took a long time. I came up with the first prototype in 1999. I came up with a very good, well-working prototype in 2003. I had a day job. I was running medical companies. So I would do this on nights and weekends. As soon as I made my first prototype, I changed the way that I drank. The first one worked. It's just I was the only one who could operate it. I the first night that I had it, I drank 5 different wines, put them all back in my little wine rack and came back to them over the course of the next couple of years. It was a complete change in my philosophy about tasting. Once I developed that good prototype in 2003, I started to do some rigorous testing because friends came over and said, I love it, but does it actually work? Does the wine actually last? And so I set up a clinical trial, a blinded prospective study to see whether or not I could corb in a bottle multiple times over 5 years and then taste it against another bottle from the same case that had never been touched and not be able to tell the difference. And so a 5-year test took me 8 years with all the different iterations of design and prototyping and also the different wines that I had to try because I had to make sure it worked on everything, whatever somebody might use it on. I didn't think of it as a company until friends started to say I should start one. So I guess from 1999 to 2011 when I launched the company.
So I guess it was not that difficult to recruit patients for your clinical trial, was it?
Not at all. And the patients were all like all good surgeons, you know, patients were forwarded to me. So friends would say, sure, it works on what you're drinking. You like California Cab and Barolo and Rioja. That's easy. You know, does it work on red Burgundy, old red Burgundy, white Burgundy, Riesling? And then, you know, ultimately by that declension, you know, into a wine cellar full of 800 different wines, lots of patients in my basement, I guess, that I was blind tasting. I realized just recently that I have the largest wine by the glass program in the United States, in my house.
Probably the world.
No, 67 Pall Mall has me beat.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And if you add second to that, you'll have no competition for sure.
I have a fridge full of sake right over there.
So we'll get back to that a bit later. Now, I'd like to ask you, for our listeners who wouldn't know about your device, to tell us, I mean, how it works, what it does, what the effects are. Just, I mean, I'm sure you've done that a thousand times, but it would be quite useful.
Alcorvin makes handheld systems that can pour wine from the bottle without air ever touching the beverage on the inside of the bottle, so whether it be wine or sake, and then make sure that bottle is sealed so that no air gets in as you leave it on your shelf or in your wine fridge or however you're storing it. And so the way that the original one works is it passes a thin hollow needle through a cork. So I was drinking a lot of European wines and California wines, almost all finished with cork. The needle goes through the cork, you press a trigger, and instead of air, I use argon gas, which goes into the bottle, and that displaces the wine out of the bottle into your glass. Argon is one of the noble gases, so it doesn't have any reaction with the wine whatsoever, and so no air gets in. And then when you remove the needle after pouring what you like, the cork reseals, and you can put the bottle back on your shelf.
So the argon gas is basically pushing the wine out of the bottle through the needle. Is that right?
That's right. It's almost like you're inflating a balloon with the argon gas, and then the air or the wine comes out of that inflated balloon through the needle.
I know that some sake brewers are using nitrogen when bottling, for example. Why did you choose argon? I mean, it's a technical question, but I'm curious about it.
Oh, it was an important question. One of the variables that I changed during my initial testing was the gas. So I used argon, I used nitrogen, I used carbon dioxide, and I used helium, believe it or not. Helium and argon are both noble gases, no known reactions. Helium did not work because it leaves the bottle so fast that it would suck air in when I tip the bottle up. But my sons and I breathed all of it. And
you must have good, you have had good laughs. Is that what you're saying?
Lots of singing. So, but argon, CO2, and nitrogen all worked. The advantage of argon over CO2 and nitrogen is that it does not dissolve in a fluid, whereas nitrogen and carbon dioxide do. So beer, for example, is carbonated. Champagne, sparkling sake are all carbonated. The CO2 stays in the liquid for a long period of time, even after you've opened it. And the same is true with nitrogen. Actually, Guinness beer is nitrogenated. Those small bubbles in Guinness beer are actually nitrogen bubbles. And so I noticed with CO2 and with nitrogen that there would be an alteration of the palate in the wine when I used it. Whereas with argon, being a noble gas, it doesn't want to be friends with anyone. It leaves the liquid immediately and it's gone. So argon has that advantage. It's also heavier than oxygen, which is another advantage in terms of the way that people are using Corvin. If they leave the needle through the cork, argon is nice and heavy, like CO2. And so it prevents additional oxygen from getting in. Nitrogen is the same, basically, as oxygen. So there was some transfer, but very little. They're both good gases. It's just for my use, argon was better.
And I understand that you have, I went to your website. You have basically have, you have three different products, but let's say two families of products, which are quite different. Can you?
Yeah. So Corvin was the first, the needle-based system, which we now call Timeless. We then added a screw cap adapter to that so it can work on screw cap bottles. And then I was in Australia and I had a restaurateur who said to me, I love Corvin, but it pours too slowly. I don't need the wine to last for 5 years. And I don't need it to take any training. I want something that doesn't take any training. And can it work with every closure? Because we worked with only screw cap and natural cork. And so I said to him, are you sure you like Corvin? You have all these complaints. So he forced me to develop a system that we call Pivot, which is actually what I use on sake. Pivot does not use a needle, uses a big tube that goes through a valve in a stopper. So what you do with Pivot is you open the bottle, remove whatever the closure is, place our stopper in it, and then you have this system that uses argon still to push the wine out of the bottle through the stopper. The advantage is it works with every wine closure and every sake closure. So sake has quite the variety of different closures that are used. Screw cap is great and on many, but there are also those sort of T-top like closures with the blister of either plastic or something that has gold foil or silver foil over it. So the sake producers complained also that Corvin did not work with their system. So Pivot actually works very well. That's the name of this new system.
Did you actually had some conversations about sake before Grace contacted you?
Yes, three. One was at VinExpo right after we launched. There were a group of sake producers at VinExpo, which is a huge trade show at that time in Bordeaux. And they came over to look at Corvin and they said, come with us to our stand, brought me over to their stand and said, look at all the different closures we have. Please fix this. Make it work with us. And I said, I promise, I will ultimately do this. It took me a couple of years, but I did. And then I was contacted by the largest importer of sake in the United States. And he wants restaurants to serve sake by the glass. And the big frustration he had is that they were frightened to offer more expensive sakes by the glass because they were worried they would not sell them in a fast enough period before it oxidized. And so I started doing testing with him and his staff, and then luckily ran into to Grace.
Yeah, because I guess that story sounds familiar to you, Grace, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely.
So what happened? When did you, on your side, why did you contact Corvin what was the process?
Well, internally, we have this weird kind of connection and serendipity with the business that we seem to have these introductions and people who sort of gravitate towards Toku at just the right time. And Corvin is no exception. It was just a really serendipitous introduction via a mutual friend, Douglas Blyde, the wine writer. And he and I had been discussing, barriers to the UK for sake. At that time, I think we were only 4 months in to selling Toku, and Douglas mentioned that he had been working with Greg on some sparkling wine preservation, and that Greg had spent a lot of time in Japan and was really keen on sake. So being the good sport that you are, Greg, you actually let us do a blind tasting where we did actually blindfold you back in Arnhem. In the
UK. Still my favorite way of doing a blind tasting.
quite a funny way to spend a morning in Mayfair. But we we were just really keen to explore the possibilities of preservation of sake. And so we ended up blind tasting. I think that Toku had been under Korovan for 6 weeks at that point.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, we had no idea because we hadn't done any testing on preservation at all within the business of how this was going to turn out. And I think you actually incorrectly guessed which had just been opened, which was an amazing result.
Yeah, it's I have been humiliated repeatedly with my own systems and happily so, because if I can't tell and if others can't tell, that's actually a very positive thing for the industry. That I was I do a lot of blind tastings with sommelier around the world with different beverages, predominantly still in sparkling wines. And they're always extremely frustrated when they don't get it right, which was open 3 months ago or 6 years ago or whatever it was, versus the freshly opened. And I tell them, you know, this is not a test of your palate. This is a test of argon gas and of our closure. And isn't it wonderful if it does work, right? Then you can taste and drink anything you wish and sell at a restaurant, anything you wish. Sake is such a beautiful beverage. Actually, toku sake is an absolutely staggering junmai daiginjo. It's such a good sake to taste, and it's a delicate spirit as well. All the things that happen to wine happen to sake. The beautiful aromatics go away. The beautiful palate goes away. All the subtleties that make sake such a great beverage go away with oxidation. And it's a shame to lose it, for sure, if you opened it and not drunk it for a while. But more so, it's a shame not to explore it. It's a shame not to taste the great sakes of the world and learn this whole new beverage category if it's new to you, at your own pace, without a rush.
Exactly. I think that's where the potential really lay for us as well. And I remember kept coming out of that tasting with you, Greg, and having this sort of revelatory moment about how we could use this not only for Toku, but across the whole of sake for the UK as a category, because there are so many barriers that we're already facing because the UK is quite a young market. But having that peace of mind and, as you said, giving people like another accessibility point if they are new was really exciting.
Korovan seems to be a great tool, and we will discuss that a bit further. But I'm curious, for your clients who do not use Korovan, what is your standard recommendation? Or do you have a standard recommendation, Grace?
Oh, it comes down to what they love. What I use at home, I use all three systems. Probably the easiest entry point is, and the most versatile is Pivot. Pivot doesn't preserve a wine for years, but it does preserve a wine for a month. So you have a month to, this is the one where you remove the closure and place our stopper. It's the least expensive, so it's the most accessible. Financially, and it allows you to have three or four open bottles of whatever wine or spirit or sake you like that you can drink casually over the course of a month. At home, I use that for sake. I also use our Timeless because I have so many wines, and frequently when friends come over, I'll use Timeless because I don't want to think at all about when I'm going to drink that bottle again. If you're like me, and you just want to be able to taste a wine today and say, oh, you know what? It's not ready. I'll drink it again in 5 years. Korovan Timeless is for you. It also, if you buy one device, you can work across all of your wines because you don't need a stopper for every bottle. You already have it in the cork that's in the bottle. And then I use Korovan Sparkling quite a lot. Korovan Sparkling is our newest innovation, one of our newer innovations. It allows you to preserve sparkling wine for months, if not a year. I just opened a bottle after a year. It was great. So I love sparkling wine as a category, and I drink it quite often. But our entry model that's the most versatile is probably Pivot.
And sorry, but my question to you, Grace, was for those who do not have Korovan systems, have you come up with a recommendation to your clients about toku sake? Like, are you just saying drink it quickly? have you put a date? You think it's gonna be? Have you reserved? You think it's gonna be good for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days? And another question I want to ask you, I don't know if you did that, is test, I'm sorry for that, Greg, I'm going to mention it, but test, vacuum pumps. There is a bit of a, I researched it a little bit, and I spoke with a number of sake professionals, and sake conservation is not something that there's been a lot of research about. And talking about vacuum pumps, there is this doubt about what's the effect or on a really fragrant Junmai Daiginjo? Are you pumping the aromas out while you should leave them in the bottle or not? Is that something that you have researched and that you have documented for your clients, Grace?
So in terms of our recommendation after opening, we tend to say to sommeliers that it will be pretty much unchanged after 3 weeks, as long as it's kept sealed in a fridge.
Okay.
Refrigeration, of course, for sake is absolutely essential. And because of the way that Toku is produced, we keep everything at 5 degrees from the minute that it's bottled all the way through shipment. All of our storage is 5 degrees. We're really, really consistent. Even our, final mile, everything is kept really chilled. So refrigeration is the kind of key message, particularly for those who maybe aren't super experienced with sake. We work with quite a lot of sommeliers and accounts where we're the only sake on their menu. So, hopefully our rate of sale is higher than that. And it is, thankfully, we're not having to wait 3 weeks for people to get through a bottle. But it just is a little bit of peace of mind for people who are selling toku by the glass. I guess when it came to preservation, for us, we just did not look beyond Korova. A couple of reasons for that being that, as I said, the UK is still quite, it's a growing market for sake, but it's not as established as some of our other European markets like France, for example, or the States. And Korovan is just such an established name. And it has this a reputation, ultimately, for consistency. The trade know it so well. Almost every account that we work with already has a Korovan system in place. So there's huge peace of mind there that sommelier is already fully trained. I know that Korovan, your team, Greg, in the UK are just there everywhere, which is awesome. So we really didn't look beyond Korovan in terms of other players in the market, just because we ultimately wanted to work with a business that we knew would be completely dependable, which it has been. And also, it's tried and tested, as Greg was saying, about the development of the actual systems.
May I ask, does it mean that when you introduce your product to new accounts, well, as you said, most of your accounts actually have a Korovan device already, but are you like bringing both together and just...
It's so dependent, I suppose, on where we're targeting. But as I said, most of our accounts already have a Korovan system in place, but they may not be aware of the application for sake, which is really exciting to be able to say, you might not have a sake on the menu currently, but we are completely compatible with all of the systems. We can come in and do a training in tandem with Korovan. And again, it's just peace of mind for the sommelier who already knows how to use that system that, this is another product that I can include on my buy the glass menu. But then there have been, for example, we're running a couple of case studies in tandem with Korovan where we have specifically chosen a hotel or a restaurant where they have a really substantial and developed wine offering, but they might not have sake. And so we might approach them together and just say, we could run this as a case study. We can offer you support with capsules. We can come in and do trainings with your teams. And it's just been a really, really successful way of expanding awareness of sake as a category, but also that it can be preserved and enjoyed in the same way that you would with fine wine.
And I love that. And I remember a year ago, maybe 2 years now, we interviewed Xavier Tuisa on the show. So he's the sommelier of Crayon, but he's the founder of Cura Master, the sake competition that takes place in Paris. And I remember this conversation about, obviously he's a big sake fan and he has a lot of sake in the Crayon cellars. but the challenges of introducing sake and keeping sake on the menu consistently when you have when you have good and expensive bottles was something that really came out. So I mean, as a sake fan and an evangelist, I love your story of using Coravin as the door opener in a way for new accounts. That's great.
It definitely is. And I think that, you know, the challenges are the same in some ways between fine wine and sake, but there is the added element that sake obviously ages significantly quicker in the bottle than fine wine. So just again, it's just about giving people another reason to say yes to sake and to feel confident in what they're offering their guests.
That's my favorite. I mean, there's a symbiotic relationship between Coravin and folks like Grace and Toku Sake. We all have the same desire. We want to expose customers to this spectacular beverage. And again, through that, the entire beverage category. I mean, our mission at Coravin is to expand the ways that wine and spirits are drunk, served, and sold, enjoyed, served, and sold. And this is another pathway that we can do that. And it is, as Grace is saying, you know, it's that comfort. My favorite sales stories are the ones where we sell a Coravin into a restaurant and the restaurant said, oh yeah, I put this incredibly expensive bottle on the by the glass list. And if I'd known it was going to sell in 3 days, I wouldn't have used Coravin. And so, you know, it's, and I'm like, yeah, well, now put five of those really wonderful bottles on the by the glass list. And it's this process of change in behavior. Right. Because I hear it in Grace's story as well. Right. They have just one sake on their list. I would love to see that change. That's where it starts. But can you imagine walking into the into a good restaurant, any good restaurant in London, and seeing, you know, Nama sake and Namazume sake and Junmai Daiginjo and Daiginjo, and, you know, see a spread and koshu sake of the different varieties and styles of sake that exist all by the glass, because, you know, maybe they would sell through them before 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe they wouldn't, but with Coravin, they know that they don't have to care. And the great thing about Grace and Toku is that they pushed us. You know, I'd done testing with our Pivot and our Timeless with screw cap systems on their sake. We have a new system called Vinitas that makes sample bottles that you can then leave behind at a restaurant for them to try that have a shelf life of a year. And so Grace said, you know, I want to see how long you can make this last. And so we did 3 month blind tastings following our 6 week tasting. And now we have samples that are under Pivot and Timeless and our new system, Vinitas, that are waiting for a year to come out. And we'll be doing another blind tasting in a couple of months. So it's, you know, she pushes the edge of what we promise. And then by doing so, our customers can gain greater comfort that they can start putting some really spectacular sake on their by the glass list.
Question, I mean, after Toku Sake, I heard that you've expanded the range of sake that you have tested your system on. Can you share with us what you did and what the results are?
There's a wonderful master of wine who's also a sake master named Michael John Simkin in New Jersey, and he's my sake oracle. And so I wrote to him and he wrote back a beautifully written letter with a quick summary of the different styles of sake and said, here is the range that you need to test. And then here are the ones that are the most challenging. And he said, you know, from the beginning, Nama sake was going to be very challenging to preserve. So unpasteurized sake, as well as some of the more aromatic and fragrant Junmai Daiginjo like Toku. Sake. So he said, unfortunately, the more expensive ones go off more quickly, and Nama sake goes off more quickly. But it would be great if you could also test Genchu and Nakazume, and if you could test Koshu. And so, pardon my sounds in the background. And he was probably right, as he often is. And I've done testing on all of these different styles. out to 6 weeks. And I actually just am looking at my data, and it looks like we did the vast majority of them for 3 months. I think we tested 12 different sake. So not an extraordinary number of sake, but they filled all the different categories that he suggested. And the results have been great, like with Toku sake. Sake preserves well under argon with our closures. I wasn't expecting anything different, but there's a beautiful appreciation of subtlety in the Japanese culture. I always say to people when I explain Japan, we have bad, good, better, best. That's how the United States thinks, right? Bad, good, better, best. Japan, between better and best, is a spectrum that's 5 times as wide as our bad, good, better, best. And so I was worried that perhaps my palate wasn't picking it up because I was not so well trained. So this sake importer has a super taster, wonderful Japanese woman on their staff, and she tested through another 10 or 15 different sake she thought would be challenging out to 3 months. And she said, yep, your system works. And that's when I was like, okay, probably functioning.
Actually, on your comment about Japan's culture, I mean, you can sometimes remove best. I mean, like, Japanese, it's really hard to get them to give the best grade to anything, because there's always a possibility to improve. There's always.
It's part of the beauty of that wonderful country. And Grace, you must get out there.
I know. One day.
Did you find some challenges with particular sake? No, not because of their style. I mean, like the way they've been produced, or the way the juice has been processed after pressing the mash, but because of the texture of the sake or the sugar content of the sake. Because you've got watery sakes, or you've got thick nigiris, and a wide range of possibilities in between. Have you tried on heavier textures, and do you have some thoughts or results to share?
I have, and they're pretty rugged. They do well. The nama sake is the hardest to preserve, and as Grace was saying, temperature is everything. So you can't use Korovin on sake and then leave it out in your kitchen and expect it to work. Sake is still, even if there's no oxygen involved, it's still subject to temperature. It's a very fresh, and nama is the freshest and most exposed of the sake, and has such beautiful subtleties to it that super tasters for sure can pick it up pretty easily if you fail, and even I can pick it up after a couple of weeks if you fail. So the toughest was nama sake, and we've run into that in other beverages. For example, with Korovin sparkling, we found that petnat, petchalin natural, was the hardest to preserve because it still has living stuff on the inside of it, and any exposure to anything, and they're going to go crazy. So I think that's the main challenge. The other challenge we had was Japan really is creative in terms of its closures and its bottle shapes and its bottle styles. There's divergent evolution of closure styles in the West and in Japan. And so there are subtle changes that I would like to make and plan to make to our systems that the average user in Europe and the United States won't notice, but might make a big difference for Japan. And so I'm perfecting our screw cap and our pivot system to make sure that they fit perfectly with as many sake bottles as I possibly can. That's really the bigger challenge.
What cloner are you using, Grace, on the Toku sake?
We use a screw cap, so conventional, Greg.
Yeah,
screw cap.
Thank goodness. But even there, subtle changes I would like to make to perfect the fit. So Luckily, the Japanese chose the standard screw cap when they went to screw cap, the same one that's being used in New Zealand, Australia, and more and more across the rest of the world for a still wine.
And sorry about coming back to that, but have you tried it with a nigori sake, so a cloudy sake? There are two aspects to my, or two dimensions to my question. One is obviously keeping or preserving the taste, but the other one is like physically being able to pull or to push out the liquid from the bottle through either the needle or at least if you're talking about pivots, the tube, because of the texture, the thickness of the sake.
Yeah, that's not an issue. It takes a little bit more pressure to pour the thicker sake. And we don't lose the cloudiness because Korovin does not fine out even sediment, unfortunately. We've been asked if we filter out sediment with our needle, but we don't. Everything passes through. Okay. So that has not been a challenge.
Okay, interesting.
The stuff is delicious too, so thank goodness.
Yeah. I mean, nigori is a significant part of market share of the sake market in the US in particular. So I guess that can be relevant in your country.
I know that it was tested pretty extensively by our sake importer friends. So they validated it on that system. I validated it, but only for 6 weeks. So I need to do more extensive testing. And I plan to do so when I head to Japan next.
So tell us a little bit about that. What's the plan?
Oh, I wish I was going to where toku is made. There are so many beautiful parts of Japan. Hokkaido is such a stunningly beautiful place. But I'm going to be going to Tokyo and Osaka for a series of events in the spring, so in May. And then we work very closely with the sparkling brands of Moët Hennessy. And so they are holding a global sommelier challenge where they go from city to city. And in November, I'm going to be joining them in Tokyo and probably Osaka again for their sommelier challenge.
Interesting. And I'm sorry, I don't know, but is Korovin well? I mean, presents in Japan already?
It's sort of like your view of best. Still an opportunity to improve. Japan was the last country where we launched. There were some challenges in getting Argon approved for use with food in Japan that have finally been overcome. Okay. And so, Argon is safe, and now the Japanese government recognizes that, which is wonderful. This is part of, and then the pandemic got in the way. So that approval happened, and then there was this pandemic. So this is my first trip back to Japan since the pandemic. And sabishii desu, I miss it. I love the country.
You're not going for Moët Hennessy only. You plan to meet the sake community as well and explain a little bit what you've explained to us today and try to develop something there?
Absolutely. So the rule with Korovin is you always start with the producers whenever you go to a country. And so there are also still wines made even in Kobe, where I used to live. And so I would love to visit with the sake producers and the still wine producers because our product in the end is used on theirs. And so I want them to be comfortable with it, which is why Meeting Grace was so perfect, you know, to be with the producer first and then have it come into the restaurants because they're comfortable. They know that it works on their sake. I would love to do the same thing in Japan. And then to meet with the Japanese Sommelier Association, because the second group of people to use Korovin in a culture are the sommelier. And they need to believe that it works as well. And so we've launched Korovin Sparkling since I was last in Japan. And Japan is not only the number one sake consumer on the planet, but also the number one, or one of the top sparkling wine consumers on the planet. And so I have a lot to talk about with the Sommelier Society in May.
Grace, on your side, I mean, when we when we were speaking with Sarah, she mentioned a British Sake Association project as opposed to a Toku Sake project. Then I understood that you were behind that project. I mean, I don't know how you communicated with other members of the British Sake Association and if the association took the results and did something with it or are about to do something with it, but.
Well, I suppose our relationship with Korovan is still kind of in its infancy, really, because as a brand, we are as well. And so we haven't done a huge amount in terms of talking about the testing that we've been doing. It's more just been kind of anecdotally sharing it with the community. It's a very small group here in the UK. And, you know, I think everyone in the sake category really thinks that, you know, rising tides lift all boats. And so sharing information and giving each other as many ways to make sake accessible in all its various forms with consumers can only benefit everyone. So we've just been kind of lucky that our relationship with Korovan happened at the time that it did. And so, you know, we very much support anything else that would happen across the rest of the category.
We have the same, even though Japan is the main sake consumer in the world still, and the community looks bigger. I mean, one of the real enjoyment of being part of that community here is how sake lovers and fans are supporting the category together. So I fully understand what you just said.
It's an amazing community. It's incredible. And especially with people like Sarah, she's so generous with the knowledge that she has. And I've found that across the board. You know, I had coffee with a friend of mine who runs My Sake. And she has this is Erica Haig, and she's also got a really beautiful little sake bar in Covent Garden. And they are doing the most amazing job of just exposing all the various forms of sake to consumers in a really accessible, easy to understand form. And so just anything that we can all do to support each other is just such a fantastic group of people.
I have maybe one last question before we conclude our interview or conversation. It's about economics, and I'm sure you've done a number of scenario, Greg, for sommeliers or restaurants. I mean, your system has a price. Then you have to buy the gas to refill the system or the device. I'm absolutely convinced that it works very well economically for a sommelier for a sake bottle such as Toku Sake. But if I take the other end of the spectrum, which is readily available sake in Japan, excellent sake, but I mean, as you may know, prices are relatively low in Japan for sake. How does it work? I mean, do you have some price points to give to us, or some ideas of?
There's use at home and there's use in the restaurant, and okay. And Grace and our wonderful team in London are exploring exactly that by doing case studies with restaurants and wine bars, talking to them about selling sake by the glass and showing them that it's a financial benefit. There's two ways of looking at it in the restaurant world, and then I'll talk about home. One is by the lack of wastage. So you're not throwing away anything. And that's an important loss, and it's for a restaurant, and it's normally how they think about Korovan first. The more important way to think about Korovan is, what does it allow you to sell by the glass that you would not have otherwise sold? So being able to sell Grace's sake, Toku Sake, by the glass. This is a premium bottle of sake without fear of waste, but it's also the revenue that you generate that you would not have otherwise. Maybe somebody's unwilling to buy a full bottle of Toku Sake, but they're absolutely interested in trying it by the glass. And so this opens up a path to more rapid revenue for a restaurant. And that's true across sparkling wine, still wine, and sake. I like to say, it's not the cost of using Korovan and balancing that against the wastage you're avoiding. It's the revenue opportunity you create by using Korovan. that's the dominant factor. I was talking to one of the owners of Noble Rot in London, and he said, Corvin is 15% of my sales in the restaurant, and it's 25% of my restaurant's profit because of what I'm able to sell. And so he's like, without Corvin, I wouldn't have all of this profit. He's like, I don't understand how I would run this business. So I think that's the way to think about it in a restaurant. Cost per glass. Luckily for sake, if you use Pivot, Pivot's our most efficient system. You can get 20 to 25 glasses. This is 150 milliliter glasses, American glasses. Rarely are you pouring 150 milliliter glass of sake, but you can. So that's quite a lot of wine with one capsule. And it depends on what the price of the capsule is in the various markets. And I have to check on Japan because I know the exchange rate is just devastating for the Japanese at this point. It's a crazy currency time. Anyway, it winds up costing somewhere between 20 cents American or European and 40 cents per glass. And so the question winds up, you know, is this glass worth 20 to 40 cents without, you know, and is that freedom of being able to taste across multiple bottles at home even worth 25 to 40 cents?
Well, I will personally answer yes, absolutely. I mean,
me too. I buy my capsules.
And I mean, I have many bottles opened in my fridge today, and it's really hard for me to see them getting
degraded.
Yeah, degraded. I must say that there is good and bad oxidation, and sometimes it's quite fun to see how an amazake will evolve and develop new nuances. At some point, it's going to become a little bit unpleasant and with, like I would say, smells rather than aromas, but. For a while it can be fun. So
I do actually think that's quite an interesting point, because I've found as well that there is this challenge of, this is the way we've always done it, so why use something new? Not so much in the UK, but just like anecdotally speaking to people in other markets, they're sort of like, well, you know, why do we need to preserve it? Because some people like it as it evolves over the course of a couple of days, etc. So it's quite an interesting challenge, I think, getting people to overcome that mindset when they've done something for so long. It tends to be in the more traditional, mature sake drinking markets.
It is. It's a different beverage. And you know, wine, so just because oxygen changes something doesn't mean it makes it worse. We have people using Pivot on Scotch whiskey in Scotland, and they have a bar serving Scotch. And they said, yeah, Scotch oxidizes. And as you go over the course of 3 to 4 months and you get down to the last shot or two or three of in a bottle, it's much worse than at the beginning. And they said, you know what? Our customers don't generally know, but we do. And so we use Pivot. And so, you know, I would never have guessed that, right? I guess I have to throw away all the spirits that I have sitting in the sunlight, in the heat of my
God, Greg.
No, you can tell I don't drink spirits. It's not my thing. But
as a previous spirits evangelist, I'm devastated.
Right. And so I didn't know as a customer. So it's, for me, preservation of sake, I do love to see how it changes over time with more exposure to air. And it is a better change than what happens with wine. I mean, great Vitis vinifera based wines after 4 days, 5 days, you know, and open and poured down to the last glass are going to get pretty bad. I mean, undrinkable, unpleasant. Whereas sake is different, and it has its own characteristics. So I'm not a zealot when it comes to use of Corvin. I'm not saying everybody must use Corvin all the time. One of the key things about our mission is to expand the ways that people enjoy, serve, and sell these beverages, not to replace. So I still, even with a friend, will open a bottle of sake and, you know, we'll drink it together. It's still a wonderful experience. So there's still buy-the-bottle sales going on.
And I'm very glad you opened the door for Shochu and Awamori as well. I mean, we have some beautiful honkaku shochu produced here with delicate aromas, fragrances, and it would be nice to test your system on shochu as well. And then I guess it would.
Please do let me know the results. That's another category I haven't tested.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. I mean, thank you so much for your time till now. I mean, before I conclude, let me ask you, I mean, each of you, just to tell us how we can, how our listeners can contact you for questions or personally, if you run personal accounts and you want people to be able to follow what you do, and if you have any final thoughts. Grace,
I'll let you go first, Greg.
Okay. So Instagram is the only social media that this old man uses. And so you can find me at Greg@Coravin. That's G-R-E-G-A-T, Coravin, C-O-R-A-V-I-N, on Instagram. And then I would very highly suggest that you follow Tokusake on Instagram at least as well, because it's a pretty compelling and beautiful Their photography is fantastic.
Oh, thank you. So I'm also on Instagram. As Greg said, we have our brand page, Tokusake. We've also just launched our new website, which we're very excited about. It's, I think, looking pretty beautiful. Lots of stunning snowy shots of the Hokkaido countryside as well. And I'm also on Instagram at shake.and.sake.
Oh, excellent. And you
Coravin also on Instagram, Coravin. Just search for Coravin, you'll find us.
Coravin, yeah. And you recently had the new addition to the team, Grace, I understand.
Yeah, we have. We have been very fortunate to welcome the Double Academy Award-winning actor, Cate Blanchett, to our team as our creative director, which is really exciting. And we're just so thrilled to have someone who has such an authentic relationship with Japan and knows so much about the category joining us. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people since we announced that news within the community, and it's just a really exciting time, particularly in the UK, because everything is starting to gain some traction and awareness with consumers now. But to have somebody like Cate on board and helping us with our creative vision and strategy, it's amazing. We're thrilled.
Can we expect more Tokusake products soon? Or I guess you still need time to build your franchise, but...
Yeah, so we launched, as I said, at the end of 2022 with 1,500 bottles, and we'll be releasing our next liquid at the kind of end of the summer this year, which we're really excited about. So watch this space. We've got a very awesome packaging innovation coming alongside that too.
Excellent. Thank you again. I mean, it's been a great pleasure to
thank you for the interest.
Have you both on the show, and
a great conversation.
Yeah, and let's try to follow up one day. And I hope Greg, that we can meet, and Grace as well, that we can meet in Japan next time you're in town, and maybe we'll follow up another episode in the future and talk about shochu. Why not, or awamori?
I have only late night memories of shochu as a 20-year-old man. So it's my experiences are very akin to tequila in the United States. So you'll have to educate me.
With pleasure.
That's so funny that you say that, Greg, because that's always the comparison that I make when I'm speaking to consumers mainly about their first introduction to sake. Is they're like, oh, I don't like it. It made me really ill once. And I'm like, well, it's what people think about tequila, and then they discover amazing sipping tequilas and they change their mind. We all just need to have that revelatory experience of discovery.
Absolutely. And tequila is a broad category. My only, we're the only spirit that I consume.
Okay. So that will do it for this episode of Sake on Air. Please take a moment to review and rate us on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you may be enjoying the show on. And feel free to send your questions and comments to questions@sakeonair.com or at sakeonair on Instagram, X, former Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us on YouTube as well. We absolutely love to hear from all our listeners. We'll be back with more Sake on Air in just 2 weeks. And until then, Kanpai. Sake on Air is made possible with the generous support of the Japan Sake and Shochu Makers Association, and it broadcasts from the Japan Sake and Shochu Information Center, located in the heart of Tokyo. The show is brought to you by Podscape Productions, with editing and sound production by Frank Walter. Grace and Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Kanpai.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure.
It was great.